You're listening to Truly Criminal, the home of true crime. To see the video version of this case, including the footage and photos, you can find us on YouTube. Just search for Truly Criminal. The 18th of March 2018, Riverview, Florida, just before midnight. A 911 call comes in to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department.
What's the address of your
emergency? I'm shot, help me please.
What's your address? Help me please.
He's shot.
Where?
A male voice could then be heard coming in and out of the background, and at one point the dispatcher heard the man shout, she killed me, Allahu Akbar.
Ma'am, hello.
They got a partial address from the woman, but after 4 minutes, the call ended. Authorities set off to the house in question, 13248 Pike Lake Drive. As they were on their way, neighbors were calling in too.
Hello, 911. What is your emergency?
Yes, my neighbor is beating up his girlfriend next door.
The woman who made the call ran to a neighbor's house and banged on the door before being followed out by the man holding a shotgun.
911. What is your emergency?
Hey, I just been attacked by some white demons inside Kiki. Kiki, her name is Kiki, and she tried to kill me.
What's the address?
Huh?
People started coming outside too as they heard the commotion. One man watched in horror as the man grabbed her and started beating her with the gun. James Gray awoke to the same screams. He looked through the peephole and saw the man standing over the woman who was now lying face down on the ground just outside his house. He told his fiancée to call 911 and asked if she knew them. She said she recognised the man as Ronnie O'Neill. James walked outside as O'Neill was standing over the woman gripping her arm. Before James could say anything, O'Neill started yelling at him that he didn't understand. She killed me, he kept saying, before dropping the woman's arm and walking back inside. Deputies arrived at the house at 11:49 p.m. to find her still lying in the yard. She was pronounced dead at the scene. As they turned around into the neighbouring house, they saw that flames were starting to build inside. The house was on fire. As they approached, the garage door started to open and O'Neill stepped out and started walking towards them. They ordered him to stop and get on the ground, but he ignored them. They eventually had to taser him and force him into the police car. While inside the car, he was agitated and shouting about Kiki being the devil and said the kids are the devil's kids. As they started forcing entry into the burning house, a young boy came staggering out. Blood was coming from his mouth and he was covered in stab wounds. He was smouldering from the fire and one detective said it looked like he had been disemboweled because the injuries to his torso were so severe. He said, "My dad killed my mom," as he collapsed to the ground. One firefighter finally got inside and started sliding along the wall, using his hand to guide him. The smoke was so thick he couldn't see an inch past his face. Suddenly he slipped and fell to the floor. It was totally soaked in blood, and knives were scattered around everywhere. He put his hand out slowly and suddenly felt someone else. It was a young girl, bleeding heavily and on fire. He carried her outside and placed her on the ground before another firefighter rushed over to him. The girl had been attacked so badly, she was totally unrecognizable and was almost decapitated. The firefighter said he just burst into tears, having to be held up by his colleague. Detective Mike Blair was now hurrying to the call out. He'd been in the force for years and had responded to hundreds and hundreds of these, but this one would completely change his life in so many ways. When he got there, the 7-year-old boy, who they now knew as Ronnie Jr., was being airlifted to hospital, and the medic said there was a high chance he wasn't going to pull through. He had been stabbed 20 times, and the two people that were dead were his mother and sister, 33-year-old Kenyatta Barron, who went by Kiki, and her daughter, 9-year-old Renivia Neal, who people called Nivy. The man in handcuffs and on his way to the station was Ronnie O'Neill III. 33-year-old Kiki was his on-off girlfriend, and Nivi and Ronnie Jr. were their two children. Kiki had been stabbed, shot with a shotgun, and beaten, her cause of death being listed as blunt force trauma. And Nivi had been attacked with a hatchet, shot in the neck, and set on fire. He had also stabbed his son repeatedly before setting him on fire and pouring gasoline everywhere else. At 4 a.m, O'Neill went into his first interview with police. He was being held without bond and police needed to determine what on earth had happened. He was very vague and not really present. He couldn't tell them the day or the time, and questions like, "Do you have any brothers or sisters?" seemed very confusing for him. He had joined the Reserve Officer Training Corps and was working odd jobs as a truck driver and in a gaming house. In 2010, he joined the Build Your Community, also known as BYC, a local social work group. BYC worked in impoverished neighbourhoods, mentoring the youth. Realistically, based on everything everyone had seen and heard on the 911 calls, they already had enough to charge him, but they were hoping he would give them more. As they carried on talking to him back at Pike Lake Drive, it was just a sea of yellow tape and flashing lights. Kiki Barron had recently gone back to school and was enrolled at Hillsborough Community College. Her son Ronnie said she was a great mom, always saying how proud she was, always playing with them, especially football in the garden. She was a great cook, and he said that she made the best bean pie and chicken wings. Kiki's mum Carrie said that she was her children's biggest cheerleader. She doted on them and every wall in the house was absolutely full of photos. After a tough few years, she ended things with O'Neill, but against Carrie's wishes, she had offered him a place to stay for a few months while he sorted himself out. 9-year-old Nivi had been born prematurely and had autism and cerebral palsy. She couldn't walk and was non-verbal, relying on a wheelchair and bits of sign language that she knew. Her brother learned some sign language as well to be able to talk to her, and said his sister was regularly being recognised in school because of how happy she was and how hard she always tried. She was obsessed with eating Oreos, loved colourful clothes and earrings, and had a different bow for her hair every day of the week. Detective Mike Blair was gathering information, and with 5 children of his own, he said everything about this hit very hard. No amount of training could prepare you to walk into something like that. Against all the odds, 7-year-old Ronnie survived after being rushed into surgery. He had undergone skin grafting over 30% of his body, his lung had collapsed, and he was relying on a ventilator and a feeding tube. Detective Blair went over to check on him and ended up staying, putting on a movie to comfort him as he drifted in and out of sleep.
An 8-year-old Riverview boy telling deputies that he saw his father shoot his mother. And that woman and a little girl are now dead.
Hey, Keith, good evening. Right now, people around here are really scratching their heads over this one, wondering what went on inside this home, causing someone to snap, take lives, and even hurt young kids.
It's devastating. It's not only that, it's like right here at my house, too. My home. We're right close to it.
Erica Worthy can't believe it, telling us it seemed like yesterday that Kenyatta Barron was helping her son with math.
I really feel really bad for little Ronnie, because when he actually come out of whatever he's in right now, he's going to be traumatized.
Deputies also tell us they found a man named Ronnie O'Neill III inside the home smelling like gasoline. They had to use a taser to take him down.
Neighbors heard the horrible moment.
It sounded like, just like, that's why I thought it was like a crash, but I guess it was like a shot from his gun.
Right now, it's just a blow to the whole family. It really is. We don't understand it.
His neighbor says he had no idea about his personal life, but did say he had witnessed tense moments between O'Neill and Barron.
It was like raining outside and he was yelling at his wife on the shed they had on the back. He was like up on top of the shelf yelling at his wife, and they're all going, he was like going crazy.
Following the shooting, deputies say O'Neill tried to burn down the house. Deputies needed stun guns to take him into custody. He's shown here in jail, where if deputies have their way, he will remain for a very long time.
She loved her children. She did everything she could. She took good care of those kids. She was the best mom. She was lovable. Just a sweethearted person.
When Ronnie was well enough to talk, he told them everything he could remember. His story was the same years later, which can be heard in this recorded interview.
Basically, I was sitting in my room and I saw my mom and my dad arguing in their room. I just saw my dad holding a shotgun. My mom ran into my sister's room, into the closet.
And when your mother ran into your sister's room, what did your father do? Did he go after her?
Yes. My sister was sitting on the bed. And then my dad told me to walk around and say, some words. Allah Akbar.
Was there a time when your mother was able to get out of the closet?
I just saw her, she was, stumbling outside. And then I just saw my dad chase her.
Did he do something to your sister?
He dragged her, dragged her into my parents' room. He hit her with an axe in the head, and then in the back, and the back, and then the head. And then, I saw her eyes roll, and then there was blood everywhere. He lighted something with a tissue and a match.
Do you remember, your father ever having a can of gasoline?
Yes, he spread it everywhere, and then he got the match and then he dropped it on the ground, and then it all the fire up here. He put me on the ground, and then he had his foot on top. I was laying on my stomach. He had his foot on top of me, and he was holding me down, and he was lighting a match. He was lighting a match with the tissue. No, but I remember actually before that, he called someone, I don't know who, and he said, I just killed someone. I just killed this being.
The next thing he remembered was a mask being put on his face and waking up in hospital. There was a long history of domestic violence and incidents in the household, and Kiki had been calling 911 for years. When the couple were together, they fought regularly about money, about O'Neill's lack of respect for her belongings. She would often tell him to leave the house and he would refuse, almost always resulting in him completely losing it and rampaging through the home. He would take her car without her permission, and when she asked him to stop, he took the car jack, threw it at the windshield, and said that if he couldn't drive it, then no one could. The police were called out to the house after this, but it was logged as misdemeanor criminal mischief. Kiki accepted a request for prosecution form from the deputy, but she didn't submit it. O'Neill had a long history with the law that went beyond this, everything from drugs-related charges to driving without a license and fraud. In the months before this, he had been involved in a drive-by shooting which almost killed him. No one in his family would take him in, and that's when he appeared back at Kiki's house, looking for somewhere to stay. His family added he had a history of mental health issues, and detectives said there was also evidence to suggest that there may have been conflict in the house very recently over his efforts to convert the family to Islam. 7-year-old Ronnie told the deputies from his hospital bed that his parents were talking about God and religion just before the incident. As he awaited his court appearances, his 7-year-old son Ronnie was undergoing painful and intensive treatment in hospital, and he was making a really good recovery. There was one face that was a regular at his bedside, Detective Mike Blair. Although Blair was only supposed to be involved in the case on a very limited basis, he couldn't stop thinking about Ronnie in hospital, what his family had gone through, and what his life now looked like. Another detective mentioned that Ronnie was a big football fan, so Blair reached out to some contacts he had with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, hoping that the team might be able to donate a jersey to Ronnie. The team was happy to help, and the executives even offered to go and visit him in hospital. Blair was the last to leave the room that day, and as he was leaving, Ronnie grabbed his hand and said, "Could you watch a movie with me?" He had to finish his shift, but told him he would be back. He called his wife Danielle, and they both came back over and watched Power Rangers together. A guardian was put in place to supervise Ronnie, as he was set up with a foster family. He continued to come back in for various checkups and appointments, and Blair would always make sure to pop his head in and say hi. But on one visit, the detective knew it was time to say goodbye for good and told his guardian, "Well, if he ever needs anything, give me a call." And sure enough, that call came. Ronnie was having such a tough time with where he was living. His guardian called him and asked him what he should do. "Bring him to me," Mike said. And with just the shirt on his back, 7-year-old Ronnie arrived at the Blair's house.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
O'Neill was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of attempted murder, arson and aggravated child abuse. He pleaded not guilty to all the charges and the state announced that they would be seeking the death penalty. Before any such trial could commence, O'Neill was in and out of observations with several doctors and experts addressing his mental state. After much analysis and opinion in October 2018, O'Neill was found not competent to stand trial, much to the dismay of Kiki's family and friends, and 2 months later the courts terminated his parental rights when it came to Ronnie and another child he had with another woman. Back at the Blair's house, they knew that fostering meant at some point Ronnie would leave them as he transitioned into another home and family. Ronnie had arrived at the house so sad and confused and spent every day repeatedly asking the same questions. Am I going to have to move again? How long am I going to stay? How long am I going to be here? Mike and Danielle quickly realised that they weren't going to be able to say goodbye, and a big decision was made. Ronnie wasn't going anywhere. He was a part of this family now. In June 2019, after further assessments, a judge determined that he was competent to stand trial and it would go ahead, which in June 2021 it did. This 3 years in the making court case would garner national attention as O'Neill decided to represent himself in court, acting as his own attorney, something which, for obvious reasons, everybody advised him against, including the judge. She said, "As you know, you have the right to represent yourself. You also have the right to have counsel represent you. Again, I am going to tell you that there are many potential disadvantages and pitfalls to representing yourself, that specifically you will be held to the same standard that the lawyers would be." But O'Neill demanded that he be allowed to act as his own attorney, saying that the public defenders assigned to his case refused to use the stand your ground defense for the trial, a defence in which Florida states that a person has no duty to retreat and can use deadly force when in fear of great bodily harm or death. But this did not apply in any way to this case. So when he heard this, he decided to drop his lawyers and represent himself.
Happening today, a bizarre turn of events in a brutal murder case out of Riverview. Ronnie O'Neill, the man accused of killing his girlfriend, their daughter, and then trying to kill his son, is demanding his son be left out of the investigation.
Yeah, good morning. Gail, O'Neill wrote this letter to the judge asking that his son be removed from this investigation because now he's saying he's concerned about his son's well-being. Now, this could be important because the night all of this happened, investigators told us that that child told them, quote, "My dad shot my mom," meaning he could be a key witness in this case. Take a look. Here's the letter I'm talking about. In the letter written to the judge, O'Neill writes that the state is using his own child as a material witness and he wants to protect his child from any interrogation by law enforcement. He writes that he is worried about the psychological well-being of his son. He's also asked the judge to move the case out of Hillsborough County so he can get a fair trial. O'Neill does have a hearing today regarding some public records issues, and of course, this letter could be brought up in front of the judge this afternoon as well. Of course, if it is, we'll let you know what the results are. Gail?
So he allegedly brutally attacks his own son, and now he's trying to protect him? All right, thanks, Avery.
He often screamed at the jurors, was agitated and unpredictable, and his big defense was that the case had been fabricated by the police. The 911 calls Kiki had made were fake, and law enforcement had tampered with evidence and coached his now 11-year-old son Ronnie to say things.
She called called 911.
The state began their opening statements by playing the 911 call Kenyatta Barron made just before midnight. During the call, you can hear Barron screaming and pleading for her life. The state says Ronnie O'Neill III hunted her down as she hid from him in a bedroom closet. They eventually ended up at their neighbor's front door, where Assistant State Attorney Scott Harmon says O'Neill beat her to death with a shotgun.
That's the barrel, the tip of the barrel with a dent in it.
Harmon says he then killed his daughter, who had autism and couldn't speak.
She couldn't beg for her life. The evidence is going to show I love my children. And the evidence is going to prove to you that this whole entire case has been tampered with and fabricated.
O'Neill III has been defending himself. He seemed extremely agitated, yelling at the jury throughout his nearly 30-minute-long opening statement.
She threatened to kill me with a knife just a few weeks before the incident, and she was angry about my relationship with my other child's mom.
He says his son is unreliable when it comes to the, quote, actual facts of the case because he suffers from PTSD and that he has been coached on his responses. That boy survived and is expected to testify against his father at some point during this case.
And then came a truly unprecedented moment as far as court cases would go. 11-year-old Ronnie would testify against his father, and his father would cross-examine him.
How you doing?
Good.
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
Did you see me beat your mom?
No.
Did you see me shoot your mom?
No.
But you did hear a shot that night. Is that correct?
Yes.
And when you heard that shot, where were you at that time?
Standing by the hospital.
Do you know where your mom was shot at and what part of the body she was shot in? Do you know anything about that?
No.
Now, you just said a while ago that I came back in and took your sister from her room to your mom's room and hit her with an axe, right?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
All right, very good.
Good one, all right?
All right, very good. It's time for redirect examination. So, Mr. The state may have a couple of follow-up questions for you, and then we're done.
Detective Blair also went on the stand and told the jury about he and his wife now had Ronnie living with them. And when it came time for O'Neill to talk to him, he took a long pause, and everyone held their breath, wondering what he was going to say about this. He said, "Thank you, from the bottom of my heart to the top of my head. Thank you for what you've done. No further questions, Your Honour." Blair left the courtroom. The way O'Neill behaved throughout this entire trial put everyone on edge. Experienced trial lawyer Anthony Rickman was not involved in the case, but had, along with most people, been following it. He said, "You have the person who is accused of two heinous murders screaming at the jury. When you look at how he presented himself throughout the case, pacing the courtroom, his body language, his gestures, his rage, his anger, the mood swings, he painted a picture of what he probably looked like when he committed these murders." It was now time for the closing arguments.
"He showed you a fraudulent recording where they alleged that I beat Kenyatta Barron to death. He talked about Mr. Khalil Brown, my neighbor who stayed across the street. But if Mr. Khalil Brown was a help to them proving me guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, they would have called Mr. Khalil Brown. And like I told you earlier, you will know the truth, whether in this trial or the next one. Better believe it. If you think I'm here to play around with y'all, goddamn it, I'm not."
All right, Mr. O'Neill, please stop using swearing language. It's not appropriate in a closing argument.
"Now, he played a recording that was sped up. Why didn't you play the regular recording that people can understand what the call was saying?
Objection to the defendant asking me questions, Your Honor.
Mr. O'Neill, listen, please just keep in mind this is not personal towards the prosecutors. Please keep your comments directed towards the evidence and the law.
After a 2-week trial, all was said and done, and it was down to the jury. They talked for just a few hours, and their verdict came as no surprise.
Guilty on all counts. This evening, a Hillsborough County jury convicted Ronnie O'Neill of murdering his girlfriend, their daughter, and nearly killing his son.
He was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of attempted first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated child abuse, 1 count of resisting law enforcement, and arson. During the penalty phase of the process, deciding whether he would actually be sentenced to death or not, he changed his tune and chose to let the lawyers take this part. His defense team argued that he had schizophrenia and delusional disorder and was shot just months before the murders, raped as a child, and suffers from PTSD. They said it was an idle mind in a devil's workshop, adding, O'Neill feels like he's under attack. He's up all night, he's paranoid, he's hypervigilant. One doctor who evaluated him on 13 separate occasions said that he would often hallucinate and have paranoid delusions, adding, the capital felony was committed while the defendant was under the influence of extreme mental or emotional disturbance. O'Neill escaped the death penalty, as in Florida, it must be a unanimous decision.
As count one, Mr. O'Neill, I will adjudicate you guilty, sentence you to life in prison, with a minimum mandatory of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Count two, sentence you to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Count three, I'm going to sentence you on the attempted murder, adjudicate you guilty, sentence you to life in prison. On count four.
Instead, he was sentenced to life without parole plus 60 years. Carrie, Kiki's mom, spoke to him in court, calling him a coward and saying that the wrong decision was made by the jury. The prosecution agreed and said that they felt they presented a case that was indeed fit to be punished by death. Kiki's sister Desata was devastated at the result as well, saying, he took a disabled little child and her mother in the most inhumane way possible. He slaughtered them. If you can't tell me that's worth a life, then I kind of lost a little bit of faith in the justice system, because if anything, that's worth a life. Ronnie O'Neill III addressed the court for one final time.
I am not sorry for something I didn't do, and I am not sorry for the things I did do.
And Judge Michelle Sisko told him if he raised his voice again like that, she would just ask him to leave. She gave her final thoughts in a powerful speech, sometimes fighting back tears, and sometimes struggling to even find the words, all while trying to remain as professional as possible. But this case had left her sick.
When the person from fire department, when he testified and when he said that he retrieved the body of Rodevia O'Neill from the home, and all he could do was sob. It took every ounce I had not to start sobbing too, because there is no way any person with any feeling could have witnessed or seen the photos of what occurred that night and not be haunted for the rest of your life. The way that Ms. Barron died was horrific, and that 911 call, which captured truly all of it, everyone's heard that 911 call, heard a death scream. If anybody ever wants to know what it sounds like before a human being dies, knowing that their death is imminent, that's exactly what it is. What happened to little Ronivia and to little Ronnie, but I'm going to focus on Ronivia, because she was special. Little Ronivia, she couldn't scream. She couldn't run away. She already had a life where she was born with challenges. But the pain and suffering that she suffered that night at your hands, unspeakable. That first time you struck her with that hatchet. And little Ronnie testified that all he could see was tears coming out of his sister's face. At that moment, that child knew. She knew she was being betrayed in the cruelest, most tragic and sorrowful way that a child could ever be betrayed. She was being betrayed by her parent, the one person that should be there to protect their children and love them and keep them from harm. And that was the last thing that child felt before she passed on from this earth, was your utter, cruel betrayal to her. I'm going to look you in the eye and tell you, this is the worst case ever, ever in my life. And I have seen some horrors, but this is it.
O'Neill later appealed for a new trial, but this was denied and his conviction was upheld. The staggeringly cruel events of that night back in March 2018 is frankly hard to think about. Carrie said Kiki and Nivi were the light of so many lives, lights that were dimmed far too early and in the most barbaric way. She said, "My family are my life. I breathe for my family, and now you've got me gasping for air." Their lives came to an unbelievably terrifying end, and Ronnie has been left with a trauma that is just not able to be understood. That being said, it is here that we end today's episode with a silver lining amidst such a stormy sky. Ronnie O'Neill is now officially Ronnie Blair, and he is doing amazingly well in his new home with Mike and Danielle. His new older brother Hunter said he quickly became like any younger brother. He's an extremely strong, funny kid. It's hard to picture our family without him. Ronnie said, "They are the best mom and dad and they really take care of me. There is no one else better than them. It means a lot to me to have a family that can always help me get through the things I need to get through. I feel loved. They got me through the trial and they were always there by my side if I cried or needed help. I could share my feelings with them and I felt like I could explain everything to them and it would get better." Ronnie loves performing and films and hopes one day to become an actor. He loves playing with the family dog, swimming and travelling with everyone. As well as the Blairs to help him, he is finding his feet again with regular therapy sessions. "Whatever lies ahead for Ronnie, we want him to go after it and do it," said Detective Mike Blair. "They all know that nothing can ever replace what Ronnie lost." Mike said, "Danielle and I told him we don't ever expect to replace his mum and dad. Ronnie does have fond memories and remembers times before that night that were very positive. They always make sure his mother Kiki and sister Nivi are spoken about all the time and are regular names in their house. And every time Ronnie has moments of stress, anxiety or anger, they have a family mantra, something Mike says to him every night before bed. Hey, remember, what are you?" And although the now teenage Ronnie will sometimes smile and roll his eyes, his answer is always the same. "I am safe, I am loved, and I am part of this family."